Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits Pod Quiz podcast. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It. And I have two esteemed panelists with us. We were supposed to have a third. We will try and figure out our technical difficulties, and we will get Shelley Vergstraat on with us as soon as possible, I promise. It's the second time we almost hooked up. It's going to happen. But I was pondering something this morning. Justin is in his second podcast with me this week. I feel like the luckiest man around for that, with the way his time delegates itself these days. Justin, I think you should have a nickname, right? Within the industry. So I'm going to throw one. Do you have one already?
Not that I know of.
Okay. So I'm going to test this one out on you, but I want you to remember the MLB commercial where the guy goes up to Stanton in the cage and makes suggestions on perhaps what on what Stanton's nickname should be, because he doesn't have one, you know. The Sultan of South Beach, I think, is one of them that he says, or something like that. So anyway, that was back when he was a Marlin, of course. But anyway, so I've landed on this. I want to know what you think. How about Justin the Oracle Mason? What do you think?
See, there's already an Oracle.
Is there really?
Yeah, that's Ray Flowers.
Oh, well, that's no good then. All right. Anyway, Justin, how are you today, and where can you be reached? Are you ready to rock and roll?
I can reach on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. I've been up for over 24 hours at this point and with no sleep in sight. So let's do this.
All right. And we have the voice of Philadelphia with us as well. That would be J.R. Fenton. J.R., how are you, brother?
I'm doing well, fellas. What about the nickname Osho, Justin? You ever hear of that before? That's another name for Oracle.
I have not. I don't know if I could pull that one off, though.
You're the Osho.
That sounds way too cool and hip for me.
I don't know, man. You've been hipping it up. Your hipster game has gotten better in recent years, from what I can gather, my friend. Anyway, it's sort of odd when we do this reverse deal where we don't announce exactly why we're talking about people. So without further ado, I can really do nothing else but throw out the first name on our player list. And our first name on our player list, I like to sort of mangle and say Enrique Kike when I say him, because it makes him sound even cooler. And that is Kike Hernandez, the person who has a very mysterious amount of eligibility on different sites. I've seen him at second base, shortstop, the outfield, one of my leagues. He's only available in the outfield. But he's in kind of an interesting spot right now. We'll start with you, Justin, since you're out in the NL West land. What do you foresee Kike Hernandez's role being now that we are Corey Seager-less?
I think he could turn into a strong side platoon, a weak side platoon kind of guy. I mean, he isn't super useful for the most part in fantasy. I think he's mostly an NL-only guy, or if you've got a deep bench in a mixed league. His career numbers are much better against left-handed pitching than right-handed pitching. He's got a 286 average against lefties, 208 against righties. I don't see him being super useful in a lot of formats.
Well, seemingly last year they were doing everything they could to get him in random games, even in the playoffs. So I think now the knee-jerk reaction to this Corey Seager thing was to see if they try him with a really expanded role. But I think people have the wrong idea in their head of what kind of player this exactly is. If you look at his minor league numbers, he doesn't really show a lot of power or a lot of speed. JR, are you you in any leagues, or can you see a format where Kike Hernandez is perhaps going to be a sneaky play here in the coming weeks?
So I kind of am seeing with Yahoo leagues, especially with Kike, where you have second, third, short, and outfield eligibility, that I'm suffering a lot of injuries in these leagues with Rendon and Seager and Buxton and a lot of guys going down. I'm finding I can hold Kike kind of like my fifth or fourth outfielder, bench utility player. And then on these Mondays and Thursdays, when I have guys missing games, I can plug Kike in wherever in my lineup, because I know that he's bouncing everywhere in the Dodgers lineup to where it's leading off to batting ninth. I mean, the guy's all over. And especially against righties with his 800 OPS, I'll stick him right in there. And maybe have an okay day. But just his versatility is why I think he'd be so worthwhile, just to be able to plug in and play wherever you need him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you'll hear further expanded coverage of Kike Hernandez anywhere else, because he fits this list that I'm trying to get these guys to figure out exactly why we're covering these players. Maybe the more interesting player now is the guy who moved up to second on the list. He was last on the list that I sent you guys. But I didn't want to cover Kike Hernandez and Jacoby Jones back-to-back because I was afraid our listeners would fall asleep. I moved Nick Ahmed up the list. Nick Ahmed of the swing change variety from Arizona. It's kind of a very interesting landscape of things going on out in D-backs land right now because there's stuff going on sort of everywhere in their roster that we weren't expecting. So why don't we start with you, JR? What do you think about Nick Ahmed and his sudden surge of offensive output here?
Right. Talk about someone who I think in that organization I was more focused on the Chris Owings type, you know, who can come out of that and kind of give you some power and some at-bats. But you look at Nick Ahmed, and it doesn't matter if it's lefties or righties. He's got 2 homers and 8 RBIs versus lefties. He's got 3 homers and 9 RBIs versus righties. He's hitting, you know, both pitchers pretty well. And for as cheap as he is right now, you can really plug him and play. And I'm finding myself dropping Ketel Marte in a lot of leagues and adding Nick Ahmed just to plug in right there.
Yeah, I've had the same Ketel Marte issues as well. I don't really know what to do with them. And I'm in some deeper leagues where I really don't have a valuable, options on the waiver wire to pick up. So I get the Ketel Marte issue as well. How about you, Justin? How are you doing as far as... Hi, Shelly. How are you?
Oh, finally.
Shelly Verkstraight, everyone.
What up, Shell? Podcast now.
This will happen in the Skype universe, but luckily we've got a breakthrough of contact. Shelly, we are talking about our second. We're talking about the last player I sent on the list, who I moved around on the list, and that would be one Nick Ahmed. So, Shelly, why don't you give us your Twitter moniker and tell us exactly how you feel about Nick Ahmed right now? He's surging, I believe.
Yeah, that dude is really, really hitting this year. My name is Shelly Verstrait, and you can find me at ShellyV_643. And, Nick Ahmed, I did not think that he ever would hit. Like, seriously, where did this come from? He's walking a lot. I heard that he made a swing adjustment, so I'm pretty stoked with what I'm seeing so far.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned before, the Diamondbacks seem to have a roster that's kind of in flux. I mean, we weren't expecting so much play out of David Peralta in the outfield. We weren't expecting so much play from Nick Ahmed in the infield. And Chris Owings has suddenly stopped hitting again. He's a mystery in and of himself. And Ketel Marte gets the big contract, and I don't know if he's stressing or what's going on. But maybe the right guy to talk to about that is the Osho himself, Justin Mason from the NL Westland. What do you think, Osho? Where are we at?
It's a really interesting profile because, I mean, he did make a swing change, but he's not doing things in the way you would normally expect people to make adjustments in this day and age. While he is hitting more fly balls, he's actually going oppo more than he has in the past. In years past, he's had like 40%. Pull percentages. He's dropped that just below 30%, and he's going oppo about 34% of the time right now. He's also kind of improved his plate approach, swinging less outside of the zone. Swing strike rate has gone down. Contact percentage in the zone especially has gone way up, but just overall it's gone up as well. I think this guy has just become a more patient hitter. He's using all fields. And it's really interesting to see that he's actually gaining some power with his approach, especially because, let's see, 1, 2, four of his five home runs so far this season have been home with the humidor. And for those people who don't think the humidor has done anything, go look at the statistics. The humidor has actually decreased power and run production in that park a fair amount so far this season, in spite of the fact the first week of the year the Rockies went crazy playing in Arizona. So, you know, I don't know how sustainable this is. This feels a little bit flukish to me. He's never been a guy who has profiled as much of as a power hitter, and right now he's got a 250 ISO. I would expect that to come back down to earth, but I do think that he can show a little bit more power than he's shown in the past. I think he could probably get to 18, 19 home runs, and he plays really, really good defense, and so I think the Diamondbacks will allow him to continue to play even when he struggles.
Well, I also want to mention that I've noticed by following lineups that he's been batting second semi-regularly. So this surge is something that the organization seems to believe in.
You know, he's only batted second twice.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that was fairly recently. So I'm hopeful that that maybe his spot in the lineup will be better than what our mind says. Our mind says he's got to be a 7 or an 8 hitter. So even a sprinkling of him moving up in the lineup is probably something that looks like it could portend good things for Nick Ahmed. All right. The next player on our list is a guy that has Midwest roots, and now he's moved out to the Great Northwest. And that is one Marco Gonzalez, who I thought was going to be a thorn in my side for my Brewer rivals, the St. Louis Cardinals. But Marco Gonzalez has had a very sort of choppy season so far. I play in deep enough leagues where I have a couple shares of Marco Gonzalez right now. And Shelley, I want to know what you think. Do you think that Marco Gonzalez is going to have some unexpected value here going forward at that glob of pitching at the very end of our player pool? He seems to have had some pretty good starts recently. Where are you on Marco Gonzalez?
I don't like him. I started him early in the year against Kansas City and Oakland, and that dude messed up my week because of that. So but to be honest, I think he's going to be a pretty decent pitcher, maybe about 4 or 5. He has a decent K percentage, and you know, no one in Seattle can really stay healthy. So if he can stay healthy, he's going to have the rotation spot. But if it was up to me, I wouldn't roster him. He burned me. I'm sorry.
Hey, that definitely happens. That definitely happens to us all. I had Nelson Lamet for some monstrously bad starts last year, so I know how you feel there. JR, where are you on Marco Gonzalez? I think, you know, people thought he was going to be really good, and then he had some injury-filled seasons, and now he landed in the region of opportunity, the St. Louis starting rotation, the Seattle starting rotation.
See, you know, Chuck, ever since he had that Tommy John, I was kind of a little scared off, as I normally am with guys. I call myself not an ageist, but I am kind of an injuryist. I want to see how this guy responds for a little bit. His last 14 days, he put up 2 wins, you know, with a 2.7 ERA, 20 Ks and 16 innings, which is good. His BABIP isn't bad at 391, and he doesn't really give up many fly balls for home runs, so his home run rate is down. Everything looks pretty good there, and he has a nice offense behind him, you know. My brain's telling me to pick him up and add him, but my heart's telling me, like what Shelley said, I'm going to kind of just stay away for a little bit because I too got burned in that first week. So yeah, let's wait it out a little bit. Let me see 2 or 3 more weeks of this progression from Marco.
Yeah, like I like to say that, you know, outside of Mike Trout, Clayton Kershaw and Max Scherzer, pretty much all of the major league players are searching for something, and exactly how much turbulence he's going to feel in this searching out, you know, how exactly to get through major league lineups 3 times is sort of the variable here for me. Justin, what have you seen so far, and what's the take? What's the industry take you hear on Marco Gonzalez?
Here's the problem with Marco Gonzalez. He has no, like, plus pitch. Like, he's like a kitchen sink kind of lefty. He's got like four or five pitches. None of them are plus. Most of them, or all of them, are or none of them are above average. They're all kind of average pitches to below average pitches. And I think eventually he's just going to get crushed as people see him more and more. Now, I think as he goes through these teams for the first time, he can be successful because he'll be able to keep people off balance. He doesn't throw one pitch that much more than another where it's easy to necessarily guess things. But I think eventually the kind of average-ish stuff is going to catch up with him and he is going to be in a ton of trouble. So I think you can ride the hot streak for a little while, but I think eventually we're going to see a guy who's going to get batted around, and that's if he can stay healthy. I mean, we're talking about a guy who has had a lot of issues staying healthy the last few years. It's one of the reasons the Cardinals sold him in the fashion they did, though they did get a pretty nice return in Tyler O'Neill. But yeah, short-term guy, sure. Long-term, if you're in a dynasty keeper league, I try to sell him right now.
All right, we have now covered Kike Hernandez, Nick Ahmed, and Marco Gonzalez. But I feel like with the way the masters of the Skype universe shorted us something here, and I want to sort of take a mini break from our player list. Shelley, I'd like to know a little bit more about you. Where are you from, and where are your baseball alliances stand, etc.?
I'm from Virginia, and I'm a humongous Red Sox fan. But I also live in Nationals Nation per se, so I do have a soft spot for the Nationals, but I live and die by the Red Sox.
Well, it works out that you have an American League team and a National League team. I do think that kind of helps. When the Brewers switched over to the National League, that allowed me to like the Twins and the Brewers locally, and I can play that small market card till I die, apparently. That's interesting. I know that you were a late addition to our staff as far as right after the season started, if memory serves me correctly. And I know we've been trying to integrate you more. I've seen some of your articles, which are very good for the site, which I appreciate. What stuff are you working on, and how are we doing as far as getting you involved?
Y'all guys have been great. I just kind of like... just looking at main just players that I watch a lot, and then if I see something that's interesting, I write about them. But everyone at Friends with Benefits has been very, very welcoming, and I appreciate that.
Well, we don't mind. It's certainly our pleasure. Like I said, hopefully, you know, when you can always let me know, because we generally run a little bit short with me and JR on Wednesdays, and you know, a sprinkling of Justin Mason, which we appreciate with the schedule, and the Monday podcast needs people at times too, to say the least. So you're more than welcome to keep us posted on the on what's going on with you, because we'll have you on as much as we possibly can. The next person on our list is the version. I think he's kind of fascinating because we think of all these swing change guys, and we think of them at the major league level. And rumor had it last year that longtime sort of minor league driftwood, if my memory serves me right, Colin Moran, who's now starting regularly at third base for the Pirates. Colin Moran, I'm trying to figure out if he's going to have enough power from a corner spot to be useful. How do you feel about Colin Moran, Shelley?
I like him, but definitely I don't think he's really going to contribute with the power, especially at PNC, which is known to be a huge pitcher's park. But I do like him if you want someone with a decent OBP or average, and he'll give you a few runs and RBI. I mean, he's not going to steal at all, but he's just a nice little filler or injury replacement, I think.
All right, Justin, I sort of have him in my mind as the Yulieski Gurriel of third base instead of first base for Yuli, of course. Am I overselling his hit tool by comparing him to Yulieski Gurriel?
I don't think you actually are. I actually kind of like that comp a little bit. The only thing I would say is Colin Moran walks quite a bit more than Gurriel. You look at a guy that, I mean, I think maybe there's a little bit less power in Moran's bat. I don't think we're going to see a 20 home run season from Moran anytime soon, though. I mean, though I think you could see it from Gurriel, hit 18 last year in 139 games. So I think there's a chance he could get to 20 at some point, as long as he doesn't make any more offensive gestures in the dugout and get himself suspended again. So I know people are really excited about Moran's swing change and that it it led to more power in AAA. That's still AAA, where the ball can tend to fly a little bit depending on what parks you're in. And like it wasn't super. It's not super impressive to me so far. He's hit two home runs. His fly ball rate is only 30%. He's pulling it almost 40% of the time. It's not helping. It just doesn't seem like a very sexy profile. Now that Jung Ho Gong is back in the fold and should be back sometime this summer, I think there's a chance Moran could lose some more at bats, and he's been platooned quite a bit already this year because he's not done well against left-handed pitching. He's only got 4 at bats this year so far against them. So, I'm not super enthused with Moran.
Well, I think people will have the wrong idea. I think he's an older prospect. Is he 26, 27?
He's 25.
25, yeah.
Oh, 25. So, but his name was ballyhooed around quite a bit.
He was a 6th overall pick already in 2013.
Yeah, so the name has been out there, so I think there's a little bit of prospect fatigue going on here. But I also think he's got long enough tenured, as far as I don't think they're going to be overly protective with service time for him, but I also think they're not going to, he's fringy enough as a player that I don't think they're going to hold back, maybe seeing if they can build up the value of Jung Ho Gong and sort of get him out of town before he gets in trouble and get something back in return for him. I think going into the year, I thought that they were fairly sold on giving David Freese a good amount of playing time. Was one of my concerns for Colin Moran. Then he hit a big grand slam in a game, and all of a sudden, it seemed like he was announcing his presence. He was here. And then we've gotten quite a bit of fizzle since then. JR, where are you on Colin Moran?
Well, I'll tell you, I wish Osho was a little bit more positive about Moran. The guy's 25. He was drafted number 6 overall. Look at his career minor league numbers. He's a solid, almost .300 batting average every year. Now, I mean, some people adjust a little bit differently to major league pitching, and it's going to take Kyle maybe a little bit longer than we thought. But if I'm in a deep league with a 15 to 18 teams and I got to roster a lot of guys, I have no problem plugging in a guy who's going to bat me .294. Now, he only has 8 extra base hits this year, and that's a little dramatic to me because his power is nowhere to be found. His contact rate is good. His plate discipline is good. We just got to get the power up. So if 2 of those 3 categories to me are in the good version, then let's just wait it out a little bit. He's not going to crush you. He may not just give you the great power numbers you want from a corner infielder.
Yeah, that seems to be a pretty accurate depiction right now. I think he could surge a little bit here and there, and their defense leaves a lot to be desired in Pittsburgh, especially over at first base. So I do want to see how it plays out with Jung Ho Gong as well.
I'm going to push back a little bit. Like, what upside? I know he hits, I know he's hitting like .290 or whatever right now, but like, what upside is there to a strong side platoon guy that's average only? I mean, there are guys
Let's say he really starts taking these at bats away from Freese. Then we maybe see that platoonage go away. Maybe we see more runs go up. We see the extra bases come up a little bit. I mean, we know the average is going to be there.
But, like, what has he shown that would make you think that they're going to actually start giving him at-bats, against left-handed pitching? They've got guys who are coming back off the DL, Josh Harrison, You know, they've got Jungle Gong, who's going to be coming up. There's going to be a lot of competition. There's going to be more competition in the future for these at-bats unless they start moving people. I don't think things are going to get any easier for him. And if you're talking about a guy who's only going to get to 400 plate appearances, that really softens the impact that a high average like his can have. Unless you're in, like you said, like an 18-team league, sure. But, like, everybody's owned in an 18-team league. Like, he's perfect for that. You know, he's perfect for NL only. But, you know, in your 15-team mix, your 12-team mix, he's not rosterable.
No, I'm not saying in a 12-teamer put him on your roster right now. But I'm saying in something like the Invitational or something like where you have a head-to-head 15-team league, this guy's going to be useful for you, especially if batting average is a category in these roto leagues for you.
I can see both sides of this argument. I also would say this. The one thing I will push back against what Justin said just a tad. First of all, I think Young Ho Gong is somebody we haven't seen play in a long time. So we don't even know if he can play third base. He's pretty chunky monkey already over at third the last time we saw him. There's a chance that he's really not much of a factor. The other thing I would say is that the NL Central – very quietly, might be as difficult a division as there is because the World Championship Brewers from 2019, your 2019 World Championship Brewers are in that division. And I do think at least their roster is much, much improved. And I do think that the Cubs and the Cardinals are quite formidable. So I think when the Pirates fall out of it, they may spend the last couple months of the season trying to see exactly what they have in Colin Moran. And maybe that's a little bit where either the upside or the downside is. Of course, we found out over time that sometimes platoon players getting more at-bats is not always good. So we'll have to see exactly how he adjusts. I think somewhere in between what you guys are saying, I think there might be a mild bump in some output here at some point for Moran adjusting and maybe just getting more comfortable at the major league level. But I don't think we should expect breakout 10-team value by any means at any point as well. I guess that's what I was getting at with Yuli Gurriel. Let's move on to another guy who has sort of had this, we heard his name for a while, and then, you know, he had surgery, but an issue, injury problems, and now he's back on our radar, to say the least. And that's Nick Kingham, another Pirate. It's the Pirate section of the show. Shelley, how do you feel about Nick Kingham? Did you pick him up anywhere? Where is he headed, do you think?
I didn't pick him up anywhere, but I am kind of interested to see how it's going to go. He did pitch pretty well in his first start. You know, he had a perfect game going in the sixth, seventh inning or something like that. And he did manage to keep Peralt back into the bullpen. And I'm kind of interested to see how it's going to go. I'm still hesitant to pick him up. He was pitching pretty well down in AAA this year, but he did have Tommy John surgery, so he is coming back from that. He had it in, I think he had it in 2016. So I still want to see a few more starts before I pick him up, personally.
Yeah, I think, you know, I ended up with a couple shares of him in leagues where I need to be very proactive because of the size of the leagues and because of the keeper format. So if he really turns out to be something special, perhaps he'll have keeper value going forward. But that would be a pretty optimistic take now, wouldn't it, Justin? Chances that Nick Kingham is a breakout, say, top 35 or 40 pitcher going forward. What do you think, Justin?
Ooh, I don't know about top 35 or 40, but I mean, I think he's a top 60 guy, which puts him in 10 to 12 team territory. I mean, and that's getting a lot of profit from a guy that you picked up off the waiver wire, even in NL only leagues. So, you know, I mean, he's got a pretty decent fastball, a pretty decent slider. You know, got lots of swings and misses. Outside of the zone in that near-perfect game that Shelley was referencing. And he's, after one start, already kicked out a member out of the rotation. So, like, the Pirates have some real, you know, faith in this guy. And people forget that, I mean, this was a top prospect in baseball before, you know, having some injury issues that really limit his growth ability in the minor leagues. I think Kingham is one of those guys that could have like a Jameson Taillon type rise, where he kind of comes out of nowhere, no one's expecting him to do anything, passes over the top prospects in that system in Mitch Keller and Tyler Glasnow, and becomes kind of a mainstay in that rotation. And it's a really nice park, you know, a team that, you know, defense isn't awful. So I kind of like Kingham right now, and I think if you wait another couple weeks, you're going to miss out. Like, he's not going to be available in another couple weeks. So take the shot now and you know, play him at home. And, you know, if he's got hard starts on the road, feel free to bench him, you know. But I think you got to take a shot right now.
I'm pretty excited about getting Kingham. I actually assumed that he was gone in one of my leagues, our 18-team head-to-head league, and I picked him up just a couple days ago, which I found shocking that he was out there, because that league certainly isn't known for having that quality of chances. I think one of the things that's happening here, and it's happening with Marco Gonzalez too, is that a lot of these lower-end pitchers that you have to roster in deeper leagues, like some of these guys, like, you have a pretty good inkling that they're not very good. So sometimes you want to go with, you'd rather, you know, go up against the snake you don't know than the snake you do know that's already bit you, if you get my analogy. So, JR, how do you feel about Nick Kingham going forward? Are we putting the cart before the horse here?
It's fine. I think both of you two, Osho and Chuck, you're going to get to see him up front and personal, because he's taking on your Brewers, and I think he's scheduled at home start against the Giants. So you guys will really be able to see what this kid can throw. But his minor league numbers look pretty good, you know, right before the Tommy John surgery, like Shelley was saying. No walks in his first start when he was up is kind of big, too. He can handle the pressure he showed. I think definitely in a 12-team league, he needs to be owned. In a 10-team, maybe not so much, but 12-team and up, why not? Why not own the guy? See what he's got. I like the starts he has coming up. Just give it a shot. Ride it out.
There's a minor league infielder, I believe, that also has the last name Kingham. So when I went into the search engine and I saw the Kingham, I'm like, oh, yeah, there's one person there. That's got to be that minor league infielder. And it wasn't. It was Nick Kingham. So, you know, sometimes you just got to roll with these kind of things and see what happens. I mean, it's fun to be on the front end of the train if this this really does explode into something. Like Justin said, there's severe pedigree here. But the pedigree grew cold. There's so many young pitchers around that I bet you he's available in a lot of leagues that are out there. If you need a boost, if you need somebody with upside to potentially be a top 50 starter from here on out at the back end of a rotation, I strongly suggest you look into Nick Kingham. I also want to mention that there used to be a big deal. Everybody thought it was a big deal, the pitching coach in Pittsburgh, whose name escapes me right now. But everybody used to think that was a big deal. And Ivan Nova is pitching really well right now. Jameson Taillon had a couple of rough starts, but overall, I think he's shown some pretty good progress from where he was. I think maybe there's something to, you know, the old pitching coach getting these guys right, and we'll see exactly how it plays out going forward.
Ray Searidge, I believe it
yeah.
is.
All right, yeah, exactly.
I knew it was Ray, and I couldn't think of his last name. Anyway, maybe it's because of the Ray Flowers reference that we had earlier in our discussion, who is not Ray Searidge. Anyway, I want to go directly to the Osho, Justin Mason, for this next profile that we're going to do. And that is one Hunter Strickland, who I believe is coming off of his a blown save right now. The good news is that he's got help in the bullpen because Will Smith is back, which I like to mention every chance I get. You know, since Will Smith used to be a Brewer, and now he's given so much to the Giants organization. What do you think, Justin, about Hunter Strickland? Do you think he has a chance to be, say, a top 10 to 12-ish closer? And is he going to be a long-term closer in San Francisco?
I think if Melanson ever gets healthy, they'll give Melanson back the job, just because of the money they're paying him, which is an atrociously large amount for a guy who probably has only had like 30, if that, innings with the Giants and signing that contract. But I think he should be the closer long term. I was always surprised that they never really gave him an opportunity to be the full time guy. You know, and here's the thing, like, he gets this rap as this guy that isn't very good or hasn't lived up to his potential. And you look at the numbers, like, he's been fantastic over his career. Like, even in his worst season, we're talking about a guy who had a 3.10 ERA and 8 strikeouts per 9. So, like, this isn't a guy who has been poor at any point in his career. You know, and I think people kind of I think people remember that Bryce Harper home run in the NLDS a few years back, and remember that and kind of bake that into his overall overall value. Do I think he can be a top 10 closer this year? I have a hard time believing that because I don't think the Giants are going to be good enough to give him an opportunity to save that many games. But I think he could be easily a top 15 to 20 guy, and a guy who, as long as Melanson doesn't come back, holds down the job all year. Like, I don't see Hunter Strickland losing the job to anybody but Mark Melanson.
I think it was a couple years ago when they had their push at the end of the season, the Giants did, and then Casilla was pitching poorly. And so they first, I think they called Brian Wilson to see what kind of shape he was in.
They called me.
Maybe he could do the job. Yeah, they called you. They called Rod. I believe they called Rod Beck and Rob Nen as well.
Yeah, that's very true.
And so I think that really got in people's minds, like Justin said. And there was always, I remember as plain as day in that stretch, people picked up Hunter Strickland because they looked at the numbers and they said, well, this has got to be the guy. I mean, this just makes sense. And they still used him. They used him precariously, or they used him with definitely with trepidation for some reason in that role. And so that's in people's head. How about you, JR? Are you excited about Hunter Strickland going forward? Did you blow? Is he going to be worth the $300 fab bids that certain people had on Hunter Strickland early in the year?
Chuck, I was one of those guys who didn't get in on him anywhere, just because kind of what Justin said before, that they passed him over before. So in my head, I'm like, well, they're just going to pass him over again, or they're going to go by committee. So I got zero shares of Hunter Strickland across the board, and I'm kind of disappointed in that because his walk and K ratio is great. He strands a lot of runners. He's a 90% strand rate. You want that as a closer. And he's still averaging right around 95, 96 on his fastball. So, you know, I'm kind of the opposite of what Osho thinks. I like closers on bad teams because if they're going to win, they're not going to win by a lot. So maybe you see a little bit more opportunity for him, especially in the holds and save leagues. But I wish I would have got in on Strickland. Now I'm kind of kicking myself I didn't.
Well, you know, I don't believe in investing heavily in closers in fantasy drafts. And I don't believe teams should invest heavily in closers either, especially if it looks like there's a rebuild, you know, coming up. So personally, because I get to talk to Darius and Justin on a regular basis, which is a blessing in and of itself about baseball, just for my personal mileage, I think that the Giants should sign him to like a 5-year deal at least $7 or $8 million a year, so I can give those guys a hard time about how they spend their pitching resources. Shelley, are you in on Hunter Strickland? Boy, the Giants are spending a lot of money on Melanson. I sort of feel for him on that deal. I hope Melanson gets back, but at the same time, I think that would hurt Strickland a lot.
I was able to pick up Strickland in a couple places because, unfortunately, I had drafted Melanson. So I pretty much had to pick up Strickland and use a whole lot of my fab. Unfortunately, I do believe, like what Justin said, the Giants are really not that great. So I don't think that the save chances, you know, he's not going to get too many saves. But I think they're going to stick with him, to be honest.
Yeah, you almost get that feeling that they're gonna need to use Melanson for a while in middle relief when he gets back, just to build up some confidence back up in in him because, you know, the end of the year, they ended up using Suarez. You know, a couple things happened as far as his availability. Not only did they look to all those other people, but at the end of last year, they used the guy that they picked up from Texas, who had really struggled trying to be the closer early last year. And they used him at the end of last year. So like me in my NFBC drafts, man, I need a handcuff for Melanson. He's not pitching that well. Man, I went out and I picked up Suarez. And that didn't turn out to work, which is one of the dangers, of course, in trying to pick up handcuffs for closers. Which, you know, is an unusual experience for us fantasy players. But, I mean, that led to what happened, the phenomenon that all of a sudden Hunter Strickland is the closer. He's announced as the closer. It's early in the season. Plenty of people are worried about their closers. So we got these $250 to $300 bids on him. And he's paying off to this point, that's for sure. And even on a middling team, the Giants are managing to keep the ship around 500. So I think 30 saves is a relative, but I'm curious, Justin, if you had to guess how many saves Hunter Strickland ends up this year, what would be your guess? Oh, okay. Well, that's far less optimistic than me, I guess.
All right, well, what about this question? Cause this happened in my league. There was a straight up trade, Hunter Strickland for Greg Holland. Now we know job security with Holland might be there. Security with Strickland's not. What would you say in that? Are they right around the same for the group? What do you guys think on that?
I think Hunter Strickland has better job security. One, there's no one else in that bullpen the Giants feel comfortable with closing. You know, I know Sam Dyson did it last year, but he was so bad to start the year. And like I said, I just don't think the Giants are going to make a move away from Hunter Strickland unless he truly implodes. And he's never really been that kind of guy to truly implode over the course of a long period of time. Or Mark Melanson gets healthy, which I don't think is going to happen. We're talking about a guy who, you know, he's scheduled to throw his like first bullpen since being shut down. You know, this upcoming weekend, he's aiming for like a mid to late June return. Like a guy like Holland, like the Cardinals, they signed him to the contract, but like they have no allegiance to him. They're just going to go with whoever's best and play the matchups unless Holland turns into the stud that we've known him to be. They've got him on a 1-year deal. It's not like they have to continue to give him the role. So I would not bank on Greg Holland being the full-time guy at any point, and I believe the Hunter Strickland will be rest of the way.
Well, I can spend the rest of the day trying to figure out how I warped Sam Dyson's name into Suarez. Because before when I was talking about who took over from Texas, I obviously meant Sam Dyson, who I owned for the Texas stretch last year. So maybe I was just trying to mentally forget that it ever happened. That's what I'm going to use. We have one more player on our list, and that is Jacoby Jones. And he is seeing regular bats right now, but he doesn't appear to be doing a whole lot with it. He has chipped in for 4 steals, which is kind of a nicety. Shelley, when did Jacoby Jones even appear on your baseball radar?
Probably a couple weeks ago, because I was watching a Tigers Kansas City game because I apparently am a masochist. And he hit the walk-off home run, and I was like, oh, let me look to see what he's doing. And, you know, he's just kind of having some playing time. He's got a few stolen bases, a few homers. I mean, but I really don't think that there's much there. But I think he's got some playing time in Detroit, but not much going on personally, I don't think.
Yeah, well, I think Nick Goodrum is the other guy that they're kind of using. They've talked about using sort of as a platoon player around the diamond. I wonder how much leash he has here would be my concern. You know, they want to give him a chance, and he lit it up in the spring. I definitively remember that. JR, do you think there's anything here, or do you think this is going to be a footnote to the season that Jacoby Jones got a sprinkling of at-bats, and they look to use him a little bit more here?
No, I'm not even coming close to Jacoby Jones. I think one of those home runs that Shelly was talking about was in a doubleheader, so he had like 11 plate appearances that day. But the guy's got a 5.1% walk rate. He strikes out at 25.6 with his K rate. He can't get on base to walk to save his life. His power is so weak. His slugging percentage is a 429. Every time I see Jacoby Jones come across from the bottom line on the ticker, whether it be ESPN or MLB Network, I'm like, how did he do that? Well, that should be happening. So this is someone I'm not touching in a 12-teamer and above. And in a 10-team, if I'm desperate, I don't even know if I could be that desperate to pick up Jacoby Jones. I can't see myself owning him.
Yeah, he's a difficult person to project for anything because his minor league numbers really don't jump off the page at all. Justin, are you surprised we're even speaking of Jacoby Jones?
I'm not, because you like to pick random players all the time. So, but I think Jones is an interesting guy, especially in your deeper formats, because he's going to play. And like at the end of the day, plate appearances and at-bats are currency in deeper formats. And we're talking about a guy who is going to be a full-time player in Detroit because they don't really have anything else. And depending on what kind of league you're in, I don't know what his eligibility are in Yahoo, but I mean, this is a guy who's played second base before or played third base before. He may have third base eligibility in certain formats on top of the outfield eligibility. He's got a little pop. He's got a little speed. He's hitting like 283 over the last 2 weeks. So he's improving the average in the contact a little bit. That being said, like this isn't like a this isn't a breakout guy. This isn't a guy who's going to turn around and help you in your fantasy league. But he can be an all-around contributor in a deeper format, especially in daily moves league, where you can plug him in and take him out when he's out of the lineup. So I actually like Jacoby Jones a little bit. He's still young. I mean, this is a guy who can still grow into things too. So, you know, a little bit of speed, a little bit of pop, I'll take it.
Same age as Colin Moran. Just saying, same age.
I want to mention that it's good that you showed a little optimism here because obviously, you know, we're trying to project these players and it's hard to say. The fact that he's getting regular playing time right now sort of says that the Tigers see a little something there, which I do think maybe is a reason for a little bit more optimism than JR. JR sort of poo-pooed his existence there for a second, which...
Well, is he playing versus lefties? Is he, like, getting any at-bats versus left-handed pitchers? Because I feel like every time he plays, it's just against righties.
He's played in 10 games, though. It looks like it may have it may be more pinch hitting, but he's not faring well against lefties. Let's just say that.
What's he bat? 150?
Yeah, 154.
So just as we try to be optimistic for poor Jacoby Jones, JR is the reality man, bringing back stuff. But he is relatively young, and I think there might be more here than we originally see. I just want to announce I really stink at picking up players on Sundays, because Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are my busiest days at work. So in one league, I made the cardinal sin of putting in a $20 bid for Jacoby Jones when I could have gotten Mac Williamson for $9. That's a mistake that I will not forget for a long time because I think Williamson is worth a ton more going forward as far as his fantasy upside. Hopefully we get him off the concussion DL and we can go from there. We have a few minutes left. And so I want to get your theory quick, everyone's theory on why I put these players together. Kike Hernandez, Nick Ahmed, Marco Gonzalez, Colin Moran, Nick Kingham, Hunter Strickland, and Jacoby Jones. What is the link? Shelly, you're our special guest. What do you think is the link between this this motley crew?
yeah, I have no idea. Players I don't want. That's
well, all right then. Well, we do explore the fringe on this podcast because I figure there's a number of outlets that listeners out there can go and hear about the big guys. What about you? You have a theory here for us, JR? What might draw these players all together?
I know you're going to pull out some obscene stat that somehow connects all these guys in some way that I'm not going to understand, but my guess would be that they're players that are hot over the last 14 days. All these guys have great numbers over the last 2 weeks, and maybe that's kind of a farce. Maybe should you buy into it, should not buy into it? Maybe that's the theme you're going with this week.
Well, that's definitely closer, because I wasn't purposefully trying to pick out people that Shelley does not want on her team, although I understand her theory. Justin, what do you think?
These are all under 30 players that went outside of the top 300 this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely hinting at it, too. I guess what I was going for here is I was going for people with unexpected roles. You know, going into the year, we didn't suspect that Kike Hernandez was going to get regular at-bats at all. Nick Ahmed looked like he was in trouble when they signed Ketel Marte to a long-term deal. Marco Gonzalez was maybe a little bit more. Maybe people – he got some buzz. He got drafted in my NFBC, my deeper NFBC leagues. But there wasn't a lot of people on Gonzalez. I mentioned the David Freese thing being up in the air. You know, Nick Kingham was a guy that had sort of – I mean, he showed signs of improvement last year. But I don't think anyone really would have projected him to be in the rotation as of now in Pittsburgh. And we talked about Hunter Strickland and Jacoby Jones. So I guess they were. I was going for a theme of unexpected roles for guys that went widely undrafted or drafted sort of as afterthoughts in NFBC style 50 team leagues. So Justin and JR are definitely getting at it. We don't usually do this, but I want to talk one little subject since I have Justin's ear in just a couple seconds here, you know, with the panel. I'm starting to get concerned that Bryce Harper is walking so much that his value needs to be downgraded, because he can't help your batting average, even if he's batting well, if he's getting this many fewer at bats than everyone else. Now, obviously, it's a boon in OBP leagues, but do you agree with me in batting average leagues that this is something we got to look into going forward, Justin?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, this is why I don't put a lot of stock in the batting average, because you never really know what guys are going to do. There's certain guys that are obviously year to year are pretty stable, and then there are guys like Bryce Harper, there are guys like Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, Todd Frazier, who can bounce around all over the place. It's a very unpredictable stat. There's luck involved. There's defense involved. You know, obviously he's getting pretty unlucky with the batting average right now in terms of batting average and balls in play. He's got a 212 BABIP. But I don't think that's going to be an issue. And if anything, whatever he lacks in batting average, he'll make up in stolen bases, because they're putting him... I mean, they let him off yesterday because he's just being walked so much, and it's going to give him more of an opportunity to steal. Already has three on the season, so he's almost matched what he had in his full season last year with four. So I think this is a year in which he could hit 30-plus home runs and steal 15 to 20 bases, and if your average isn't great, you know, because of that, oh well.
If you have it in front of you, what is his walk percentage now?
28.9%.
He's already got 40 walks on the year. He only had like 70 last year. It's crazy.
Yeah, but this happens all the time in April for him. Like, I'm just, you know, he gets hot in April, and then everybody starts walking him. Let me real quick just pull up his splits from last year, in which in March and April he had a 19.3 walk rate. Like, I mean, this is a guy who always, you know, starts out hot in March and April, and people get afraid of him. They pitch around him. His walk rate goes through the roof. Then he gets hurt. Things even out. I don't think this is going to be a major issue for him all year long, but I do think that as long as he stays healthy, we're talking about a guy who could go 30-20.
Well, that's... it's curious because I'm trying to figure out if there's people like me that I was always sensitive way back when this guy was a really good player. When Joe Mauer was a good catcher, I always said, well, if I'm drafting him mainly for batting average and he's sitting extra time compared to other players that you draft in the first round, if he gets less at bats, then the batting average helps you a lot less. That's sort of the base reactionary theory I'm going with. Shelly, do you feel like,
hey guys,
Bryce Harper?
Unfortunately, I gotta take off, but hope everybody enjoys the rest of the show.
No problem, brother. I'll send it to you right away then. Okay,
all right.
Later, brother.
Take it easy, guys.
Shelly, what do you think? Do you think Bryce Harper's draft value has a chance to be dramatically affected if he's going to walk 30% of the time?
I don't think so because. Even if he is walking all pretty much like 20 to 30% of the time, he still has a lot of other people who can drive him in. So he could still get you some runs. So no, I don't think that it really affects his, draft status.
Yeah, I may be overstating it. I guess it's frustrating. It's frustrating owning Harper right now and seeing all these free passes. JR, you own any shares of Bryce Harper, and how do you feel about this?
I do. I'm kind of thinking, are you thinking this may be like a Barry Bonds effect, Chuck, where he just gets walked, you know, 150 to 200 times a year, and you're going to see a lot of decrease in numbers? What are you thinking here?
Well, part of it obviously is that, you know, their lineup is so dinged up right now. I mean, when they don't have Rendon and they don't have, you know, they don't have Murphy, you know, Zimmerman hasn't been the guy he was last year yet to this point. I mean, shown hints of it here and there. And Matt Adams is hitting behind him or, you know, in the spots directly behind him now. It's not that these guys aren't major league players. It's just that I think analytically, these teams now are suddenly saying to themselves, well, if we lose to this team, let's not lose to that guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and so that's part of where my concern comes in. We're talking, and everyone is hanging their hat on Murphy, and I think I've been the biggest Murphy booster that anyone could imagine over the last couple of years. That being said, he's a guy getting towards his mid-30s that's coming off microfracture surgery. I mean, you know, so I guess I don't see, you know, a big chance that all of a sudden he's not going to be the most feared guy in the lineup. So that's kind of what I'm getting at, you know. And maybe I'm overblowing it a little bit, but it's frustrating owning a guy that you know could do a ton of damage. And every single time, it feels like every single time there's any chance that damage can be done with runners on base, that they're intentionally walking him.
Well, you know that 2004 year where Bonds got the 232 walks, he still hit 45 home runs and drove in 100. So, you know, these elite players can make it happen when they're getting these appearances. And we'll get to see with Harper. We're really going to get to see if he's this stud that everyone thinks he is. If he's going to get walked 150 times this year, let us see him put up those power numbers, even without Rendon or Murphy behind him. Let's see you do it, kid.
Well, I will say this. He hit a 3-run bomb yesterday, I believe. And I have been very impressed. He's matured. You know, Shelly, this is your area of expertise. Do you think he's mature enough now that, you know, living in Nats land and all, think he's mature enough now to stay a top 6 or 7 player overall, despite everyone pitching around him?
Yeah, I really do think so because I do think that they're going to get Rendon back soon. They're going to get Eaton back at some point, and Murphy's going to come back. And I do like what Zimmerman has been doing here recently. He's been kind of heating up just a bit. So, yeah, I think a lot of those – once those players come back, obviously they're going to have to – he's going to start producing.
Well, I mean, he does have the good fortune that I really like what Trey Turner has done recently, from how Trey Turner started as well. And as a draft value, I think Trey Turner is going to live up to a lot of those lofty expectations if he can stay on the field. You know, I still think he can get to, you know, 50 plus stolen bases. Trey Turner, maybe more than that, maybe up to 60. So there's something to be said for that. So the Nats lineup is going to be interesting to follow. Matt Wieters hasn't been very good. I personally thought people were selling short Brian Goodwin. and they were using him more than people thought they were going to. And then all of a sudden he got hurt as well. So they're leaning awfully heavily, you know, on some players that they weren't expecting to lean on right now. So it's going to be curious to see how it plays out in Washington. Well, I want to thank you guys for your time. Shelly, why don't you give us your Twitter handle again? Tell us anything you're working on.
Y'all can reach me out on Twitter at ShellyB_643. And I usually put up an article or two on Friends with Fantasy Benefits. And about once to twice a month, I write about Nationals prospects over at Prospects 1500. So y'all can check me out there as well.
Well, Shelly, it's been very pleasant working with you the first time. And I will go out of my way not only to have you on this podcast as regularly as possible, but we'll do some team previews and stuff together next year as well. JR, why don't you do the same, brother? Why don't you give us your Twitter handle again? And oddly enough, before we podcast together again, we'll actually see each other and we'll meet each other in person.
Yeah, I'm stoked about that. Twitter's JohnRussell215. I got a couple articles coming up about Yovanis Solarte, and then basically just focus right now on the Sixers, kind of making sure we right the ship against that crummy Boston team up there.
Boy, it's got to be – we really feel bad for you, all this stress that you have, wondering exactly how many championships you're going to build up in 1 year. That's really rough for the rest of us.
The trophy case is getting full, Chuck. It's getting full.
Wisconsin had some pretty good runs there for a while as far as the Badger basketball team and the Packers were concerned. We had some good things going on there for a while. Now I would trade those all for one Brewer championship in my lifetime. There's a lot of people rolling their eyes saying that'll probably never happen out there. But you just never know. You say that. I will say this. Zach Davies, when Zach Davies pitches, I am mystified how he gets so much out of that stuff. As far as, you know, he's very, very good. His control is generally really good. And just changing pitches, pitch speeds between, you know, his middling fastball and his, you know, his slider and, you know, his slurvier stuff. I just really I'm amazed that. I'm amazed at how pretty he's been, and it's been important as we wait for Jimmy Nelson to get back. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for the time, and thank you listeners out there for your time as well. This is Chuck Anderson, Shelly Vergstraet, and J.R. Fenton signing off for on another Friends with Fantasy Benefits Pod Quiz podcast. Every night I get you on the telephone, we sleep and we talk and we play.